Thank you for the introduction, Michelle, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm very pleased to be here with you all this afternoon, and I'm honored and very grateful to the Women's Caucus for selecting my abstract to present on a study I did, a landscaping study on U.S. women's advocacy organizations in the United States. I have no financial relationships to disclose. The objectives of my presentation are to go over some of the prominent U.S. women's advocacy organizations in the United States, some of their activities, their current priorities and emerging trends, as well as identify some historic and contemporary resources on U.S. women's HIV advocacy and underscore the imperative for U.S. women's HIV advocacy. So why did I do this landscaping study? As both a public health professional and women's HIV advocate, I've been involved in HIV advocacy for the past 10 years, women's rights and HIV advocacy, and throughout the past decade, I haven't really seen a lot of literature on U.S. women's HIV advocacy. A lot of it's been focused on global women's HIV advocacy issues, but not much on what's happening by organizations here in the United States addressing the HIV epidemic among women in the United States. So because of this limited documentation, I embarked on this landscaping study to see who are the key players in the United States addressing HIV among U.S. women and girls. And the importance of this is to help inform the advocacy agenda. Part of effective policy advocacy is mapping who the key players are and who you can reach out to bring into the fold who are outside of the traditional HIV advocacy groups. So looking at immigrant rights groups, labor rights groups, environmental justice groups, and seeing how the multiple oppressions can work together to address the range of issues that impact disproportionately women of color in the United States who are also disproportionately impacted by HIV. And this informs the advocacy agenda because typically U.S. women's HIV advocacy organizations have been born out of women being on the margins within traditional women's rights organizations. And because of that, they've usually not been documented in the scientific literature. And because of that, I wanted to embark on this landscaping study as a preamble to potential research to actually build the evidence base of what U.S. women's advocacy organizations are doing to address the disproportionate impact of women of color by HIV. So to do this, I did a six-week landscaping study earlier this year using general and targeted internet searches. The targeted search stemmed out of this whole study actually is an outgrowth of a study I did in 2006 with AMFAR, the Foundation for AIDS Research, in their public policy office as a part of my graduate internship with them that I did during graduate school. That study was a part of their Women's Sexual Health and HIV initiative, which was to help them identify the coalition of organizations in the United States and globally who are working on women's HIV policy issues. That was really my entree to all the national key players of who's working on HIV advocacy here in the United States. And out of that, I was like, this is really important information for the public health community to know so they can, if you want to do research studies, for instance, to know who are the key players that you can tap into, because a lot of those organizations have women who are HIV positive as leaders in those organizations. And that's a great entree to really know what's happening on the ground with people who are either affected by HIV themselves and what's the pulse of the community of advocates. So once I developed a list of organizations that were currently engaged in U.S. women's HIV advocacy, I did a content analysis of their websites, and I had personal communication with some of the leaders in those organizations. And through those conversations and through that organizational website content analysis, I came up with who the key players are. Also, I documented what their activities are, their current initiatives, their agendas, who they're partnering with, and some of the key emerging issues that are coming out of the women's HIV advocacy movement in the U.S. Also, I came across some really important advocacy resource documents that really are both historic documents within the U.S. women's HIV advocacy movement, back to like the early 90s, all the way to current advocacy resources for legal advocates and HIV-positive women advocates themselves. So some of the key players are listed here. The ones in yellow are the ones that I'm going to highlight in this presentation. AIDS Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families, the National Black Women's HIV/AIDS Network, U.S. Positive Women's Network, the Women's Research Initiative on HIV/AIDS, and the Young Women of Color Leadership Council. The first one, AIDS Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families, was founded in 1994 to give voice to the needs of women, children, youth, and families affected by HIV in the United States. Some of their current advocacy priorities are to advocate for optimal funding of Part D of the Ryan White Care Act. And Part D of the Ryan White Care Act focuses on the wraparound services for women and children living with HIV in the United States. And the Ryan White AIDS Program is the federal program that provides HIV care to Americans. It's the largest provider of health care to people with HIV. And Part D specifically is designed to provide supportive services for women and their families who are living with HIV. Part D is almost always underfunded, so AIDS Alliance really focuses on empowering the women who are recipients of Part D services to advocate for more funding for the Part D program. And they also currently are working to ensure that the 2013 reauthorization of Ryan White takes place and that it properly serves the needs of women. Two of their flagship advocacy programs, they really emphasize empowerment of consumers of HIV services, particularly women and women of color. And what they do, they mobilize, they train, and they engage women who are living with HIV into advocacy efforts and helping to bring their voices into the policy realm. They also have an advanced consumer training program, and that targets HIV consumers in Parts A and B service areas, which are the large metropolitan areas in the United States. The other organization I'm going to profile is the National Black Women's HIV/AIDS Network, and they're a community-led initiative of women's organizations, black women's organizations here in the United States that work on a range of issues that impact black women. But these women leaders, there are about 14 of them that came together, I think around 2003, to create a collective voice of black women and girls who are impacted by HIV and AIDS. And some of their priorities are to support HIV-positive and non-HIV-positive black women and girls, make sure that they're included in HIV research, particularly clinical trials, since there's oftentimes not retained in HIV clinical trials. So they do a lot of outreach to providers, HIV care providers, to make sure that the black women in their patient population are aware of HIV clinical trials. So the National Black Women's HIV/AIDS Network does a lot of work around that topic. Another really awesome organization is the U.S. Positive Women's Network, and they are a part of WORLD, the Women Organized to Respond to Life-Threatening Disease, and they're a network of HIV-positive women who really focus on building the leadership of HIV-positive women, and they developed in response to a lack of a unifying voice around HIV-positive women in the United States. They focus on combating HIV-related stigma, training and supporting HIV-positive women as leaders, and creating and sharing tools for women and HIV advocates. Their policy agenda is around these four areas: reproductive, economic, prevention, justice, and advancing women-centered care. Three of their current initiatives include gender monitoring of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, which was released by the White House last July, and that's the first ever comprehensive HIV/AIDS roadmap for the United States to address the U.S. HIV epidemic. The gender monitoring of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy is led by the Positive Women's Network, and they released earlier this year a report looking at. They did a gender audit analysis of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy to see how it impacts women, how women are either addressed or not addressed within that. And one priority area that came out of that was the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. There was no HIV-positive women represented on that until earlier this year. And as a result of their advocacy, there is now representation with PACHA to the White House Office on National AIDS Policy with the HIV-positive women. on that in a part of that council. So that leads into their positive women's leadership, helping to amplify HIV positive women's voices. And they do a lot of human rights analyses and trainings. And one recent report they did was looking at HIV positive women's testing experiences when they were, before they received their HIV diagnosis. What was their experience like in actually, going through the HIV counseling testing and receiving their diagnosis, how HIV criminalization laws are impacting them and their personal decision-making. And this report, which is noted on the bottom right, Diagnosis, Sexuality, and Choice, highlights what HIV-positive women in the United States, their lived experiences with HIV and interacting with the healthcare system. The fourth organization I'd like to highlight is the Women's Research Initiative, and this is out of the Well Project. And this was established in 2003, and it focuses on advancing research on HIV disease in women. And the way they do this is they bring together about 80 thought leaders from around the United States, from academicians to researchers to pharmaceutical representatives and HIV-positive women, to identify key opportunities to accelerate the understanding of HIV disease in women. And the way these thought leaders are brought together is it's by invitation only, and they represent people who have unique experiences. A lot of the women are HIV positive themselves and are clinicians and are, scientists. So they really find, really a diversity of leaders who are really working to advance research on HIV disease in women. And each year they have an annual meeting, and that's really where the bulk of their work is done around. They bring together these thought leaders for a retreat, and they come up with their advocacy priorities for the next year. And so they're centered around these four areas: academia, how they can impact advocacy within academia, towards policy, research, and industry. For instance, for policy, they're working to include this year inclusion of information about women and HIV disease into physician organizations. Some of the physicians as a part of the Women's Research Institute identified there's not a lot of knowledge among their physician peers about HIV disease and the need for physician leaders on women's HIV disease issues is important. Another important advocacy priority of WRI is the Women's Interagency HIV Study is the longest prospective cohort study of women who are living with or at high risk for HIV. And it's focused mostly on collecting specimens and looking at the comorbidities among HIV-positive women, looking at heart disease, cardiovascular health issues, reproductive health issues. But there needs to be more qualitative questions integrated into this long-term study to make sure that women's lived experiences are also being captured. And the last organization I'm going to highlight is the Young Women of Color Leadership Council. And this is a project of Advocates for Youth. And this is one of the leading organizations that focuses on building youth leadership. And this particular, the YWOC Council is how they call it, is composed of young women of color, leaders and activists from around the United States. And their three goals center around educating, including, and empowering young women of color to be included in the HIV prevention programs that are designed to reach them, and also for amplifying a woman of color's voices on all levels of policy, whether it's within the local school system, addressing HIV education and sexual reproductive health curricula within the local school system, or doing interviews with magazines to highlight what young women of color think about sexual health, in today's society. Some of the YWOC council members participate in the local HIV prevention planning groups. So that's really important because they help to make sure that young women of color's issues are maintained a priority within local HIV prevention planning bodies. So some of the shared priorities amongst all the organizations that I identified, these are the top five that I came across as being the central themes of what they're all trying to advance. They're trying to reduce pervasive HIV-related stigma and discrimination. They're trying to promote the meaningful involvement of women and girls into all levels of HIV policy decision making, reforming healthcare so it's acceptable and accessible, promoting the integration of sexual and reproductive health and with HIV and STI services, and I'd also like to add mental health services as well, advancing the relevance of HIV prevention and treatment, and treatment policies and research to the women's lives. Also, some emerging trends amongst all the organizations that I highlighted with you. These four are some of the kind of, I guess, burgeoning areas of interest and need within the HIV women's advocacy movement. One is women aging with HIV and AIDS, and so a lot of healthcare providers are not. Are not able to communicate with midlife and older women, which is 45 years of age and older, around their HIV risk. And when I was looking at the CDC's HIV AIDS among older women's fact sheet, there's really actually little mention of women and their unique, you know, their unique risk factors, because as women age, the vaginal lining actually thins, and there's more dryness, actually, and women who are, as they age, they are at more risk for HIV. And so some of the advocates were saying that they're seeing a lot more older women who, you know, where their providers didn't talk to them about this, and that's becoming an issue of importance for women's HIV advocates. That's because this puts women at increased risk, especially when their providers aren't addressing that issue with them in the healthcare encounter. The women in the National HIV/AIDS strategy is the major issue that a lot of women's advocacy organizations are working on, making sure that women's needs are addressed within the strategy. The impact of HIV on incarcerated women. Women in prisons and jails are 35 times more likely to have HIV than women in the general population. And Advocates for Youth, AIDS Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families created a report on serving women in the correction systems through the Ryan White Care Act programs to help address the unique needs of incarcerated women. And combination HIV prevention strategies is another emerging area among women's HIV advocates, whereby it focuses on amplifying a continuum of HIV prevention strategies for women at the individual level, whether it's improving the woman's ability to assert condom use with her partner, pre-exposure prophylaxis, which was an anti-HIV pill that could be taken before exposure to HIV, conditional cash transfers, that's what CCT stands for, that's looking at more of the economic interventions. Globally, there's a lot of interventions that are being researched, looking at the relationship between schooling and girls and HIV risk, and some local research advocates at Hopkins, they're looking at how can economic incentives for women, for girls, I should say specifically, young women, can deter them from possibly engaging in transactional sex, which could put them at risk for HIV. So there have actually been more of that research in the global sphere, but there are researchers locally who are trying to see how that would be incorporated into the U.S. society. And then circumcision with men, looking at women's some women's partners at their risk, looking at from a biomedical intervention perspective. And so just to wrap up, a couple of the advocacy resources that I wanted to highlight. The National Resource Center on Women and AIDS provides some great resources on, from a historical perspective. They were one of the first organizations, feminist organizations in the United States to address the issue of HIV/AIDS among women. And two sentinel publications was Women and the Definitions of Age, which I highly recommend reading, and also Midlife and Older Women. So back in 94, they were even talking about how with the advent of HART, highly active antiretroviral therapy, and with women having a longer lifespan, they projected even back then that women would be living longer with HIV and the need for midlife and older women's needs to be addressed. And the last resource that I wanted to highlight is with the Center for HIV Law and Policy. And two of the really great reports that I wanted to highlight is Healthcare Experiences of Women with HIV/AIDS, Insights from a Focus Group, as well as HIV and Pregnancy Medical and Legal Considerations for Women and Their Advocates. And the last one is a guide for women, HIV-positive women themselves and their legal advocates to help give women who are HIV positive a roadmap for weighing the risks and balances of considering their reproductive choices, and also helping their legal advocates understand what the laws are currently in the United States regarding women and HIV and treatment around preventing mother-to-child transmission of HIV. And also, they really focus on parenting rights of HIV-positive women to parent their children. So why the imperative? I say all this because women increasingly wear, HIV/AIDS increasingly wears the face of a woman. A quarter of women, of people living with HIV are women, and the epidemic has not discriminated against. It's not discriminatory. Women are increasingly becoming a larger proportion of AIDS diagnoses, going from 8% in 1985 to 25% in 2009. So women's HIV advocacy is important because women are increasingly wearing the face, HIV is increasingly wearing the face of women, and the need for appropriate responses to address women's unique needs is imperative. I'd like to thank ANFAR, the Foundation for AIDS Research, their Public Policy Office, the MyoTech Corporation, and AIDS Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families, and all the organizations that I highlighted in this report for their feedback on what I just presented to you. So thank you very much.